for questions for John and Prashant. So any questions? I'd like to ask you one question in terms of the web around health in India. Is there a specific commission where all these ministries work together, or is this an informal type of relationship?
Currently, this is an informal kind of relationship.
Okay.
But there is already a move to create an inter-ministerial working group under the Prime Minister's office.
Okay. In Egypt, they have a commission bringing all those units together, and it's very effective in terms of moving the agendas forward
and
mainstreaming it.
It's still in paper, but we are moving it to bring it under the Prime Minister's office.
I have one question to John about the G8. I couldn't make it before. So last year, there was two movements going on. First of all, Mr. Sarkozy makes an offer to have a new way of measurement across the GDP. And it's more on the happiness index, it's more on the social impact, it's more on the stuff. So it was Steinitz, it was a lot of Nobel economics laureates was behind this movement. It was done by the King of Bhutan, who have already the happiness index done, and it was a G8 official stuff. Secondly, Mr. Obama pronounced $20 billion in Italy for the end of hunger. And also there was nothing seen anymore afterwards on the public side. So maybe you can give us an update on this.
Maybe you could answer the earlier question as well from Daniel.
Okay, let me go in order. Firstly, Russia. Russia is one of us and has been for a long time. Back when the G20 finance ministers was created in response to the global financial crisis of 1999, Russia's finance minister in Russia was a founding member of the new club as an equal from the start, as was India and Brazil and China. So now with the leap to the leaders level, the G20, including all G8 members, agreeing to become the preeminent forum for global economic governance. For that reason alone, the G7 is essentially no more, although it's difficult to talk any particular Japanese finance minister into that. I think the last holdout in the club, and there's many more ways in which we could see Russia's evolution. It is now a provider of official development assistance rather than a consumer under different categories. And, of course, they're about to go to real global financial markets. So Kudrin has proven that he's one of us impersonating Jim Flaherty and Tim Geithner and the rest of them. In the old days, of course, the Americans were fond of rolling their eyes and saying, oh, the Russians really don't know how to do banking supervision. But we've seen more modesty on the part of our American friends of late. If I could slip in a response to another recent summit initiative. It's an Italian idea, advanced purchasing of medicines. So if you invent it, we the G8 will agree, G8 governments in advance, to buy it. And that's thought to be closing a market failure. It can get a bit theological. It has gotten running room when Tremonti offers it. But it's part of a larger concept of security of demand. And when Russia asked for that, when they hosted the G20 summit in the field of energy, all the rest of the G8 looked at them and said, you must have the Gosplan mentality in mind. We believe in private markets. So I think we're past that stage, but it does prove that there is a place for G8 public authority to close market gaps in the innovative medicines marketplace. A broader sense of social accounting, it's a great idea. The Canadian Prime Minister, when he was Finance Minister, the old one, Paul Martin, had cottoned onto the concept way back in 1990. The ties are with it. The Japanese would love it because they look vastly better than the old metric. GDP was something the world invented how to do, 50, 60, 70 years ago. It's a really old metric. The difficulty is in teaching or convincing the orthodox economists in the G8 club to move away from the metric they learned in graduate school. And here the one I can speak most confidently about is Prime Minister Harper of Canada with an MA in economics about Manmohan Singh, who, of course, has a PhD in economics. I don't know. I'll defer on that one. Now, the $20 billion, you're quite right, but not completely. Yes, it did look like it came from out of the blue at the last moment. Barack Obama rushes in to save the summit. And would that it were true? Most people in my country hope it's true and are prepared to believe it is. But the last time I looked, which was 2 weeks ago, Mr. Obama's contribution to that, which is only 3 of the 20, the Americans' share is down to 15%. It was still a request for funding before Congress, who knows what the Congress will do. There were two countries, actually, though, who had already put the money on the table. One of them is Canada, $600 million. It's real money. It's there. It's already developed. The other is the South Koreans. They put money in. That's from the emerging side. So there may be leadership in strange places, but they may augur well for what some of our colleagues are doing in other sessions, food security, as we look ahead.
Dr. Martha, as I looked at your slides, impressive. I was just wondering, how does a biotech in India that's interested in R&D for these diseases of the poor, how does it navigate all these organizations and so on, or does it need to?
And could you add, what's the venture capital market for biotech in India?
Yeah, actually, we have a separate department of biotechnology under the Ministry of Science and Technology, and this is headed by a secretary to the Government of India. And this department interacts with industry and entrepreneurs in promoting the development of biological tools and methods for, say, vaccines or drugs or diagnostics. And it collaborates with the health research in a big way, in any vaccine trial or vaccine development, drug development initiatives. So the Department of Biotechnology and the Department of Health Research on the health side, we do collaborate in a formal way.
Are they part of your 2%?
No. That, currently, the budgeting is done in a different manner. The budgeting for, that's why I showed those separate pies. The health doesn't come under science and technology. It comes under health. Health is a separate portfolio. So health gets its separate budget from the Planning Commission, whereas science and technology gets a separate budget. So it is not, I don't think it's been calculated, but 2% is not for the biotechnology. Yes, it is R&D on health. They are now working on with the private sector, and they have opened a lot of IT parks and R&D centers across the country where they bring in industry and private people to set up establishments for R&D in diagnostics, in therapeutics, in trials, some sort of that. But I'm not too much aware of financial houses being brought in at the moment.
One comment. Two Canadian biotech companies were saved by Indian biotech companies who came and bailed them out and took over leadership. So it's interesting to see what's happening in terms of where is leadership coming in.
A question to my colleague Vihang. You seem to have some idea of what could be mechanism that would help address the disease of the poor in some more time-effective way using market mechanisms. Any thoughts on that?
I haven't thought too much about that thing. In fact, I haven't thought any at all. But just from the top of my head, I think if you can build a social business with a certain business attached to it, I think you can do it. That would get rid of the government and the administrators. And I think it can work. But that's going to take a lot of work, obviously. In terms of organization, in terms of connections, in terms of actually doing the mechanism. So I think it's doable, personally. It'll get a lot more faster. It'll get you there a lot faster than the WHO and the governments can get you. Because you know how those guys work. They'll go round and round an expert committee and this committee and that committee. So you have to basically combine the social aspect with the profit motive. And I think you can do it. I think. I'm willing to go on a limb on that.
I'll jump in here, and Nick's not here, but you know, the world has been working on something called AMCs, Advanced Market Commitments, and we're basically here, instead of subsidizing the input that is subsidizing the R&D, we actually make a commitment to drug makers of saying, if you produce a vaccine, will buy for $1 billion of X. And obviously these are innovative ways, so you're not subsidizing the input, you're in fact making a promise to buy the output that works. Well, obviously, I don't know if there are scientists here, but it's not because you put money in that you find a cure, right? Otherwise, we'd have found many, many cures already. Right. So what the early trials we've been doing on, the world has been doing on this, is on diseases of the poor, one of them that where there's some promise of a vaccine. It's been now for 5 years. It's not clear it's working for many reasons, but they are trying. Right. And these things, the EMCs, are actually funded by the G8 countries. Canada is one of them trying to do it. So the evidence is still out there. But they are working on these things. So.
One comment. There's a couple of public-private partnerships that are happening around drug discoveries in neglected diseases, and the pharmaceutical industry and the biotech industry are quite present within these public-private partnerships. And recently I was in Cape Town for the African Network in Drug Discovery, where a lot of the pharma and biotech, the big ones, were represented, and they're looking into creating an innovation fund, an African innovation fund, so that Africans can become in charge of discovery of their own diseases of importance. So there are movements within pharma. Some pharmas have their own branches. Genzyme has HAND, for example. Pfizer has a specific fellowships around global health. So a lot of the pharmas are already present, and they're looking into it because if we look at bringing a drug to market right now, it's $1 billion. But if you're able to transfer some of that into developing markets and emerging areas, and you have scientists that have the same qualifications, the cost of bringing drugs to market can actually go down enormously. And they are seriously looking at how, in terms of, we looked at the population of India, and so they're extremely interested in tapping into those markets, not only in terms of selling drugs, but in terms of expertise, building local expertise. So they're very present, maybe not at the WHO table, but there are other mechanisms that pharma and biotech are really involved in.
Can I just follow up on what you're saying? I know nothing about these things, okay? But I guess my intuition is not that off, because I think what you're saying can be connected with some profit motive in an innovative way. And you got it done, basically, the way I see it. So maybe you and I should talk about this.
We can talk. I'm actually involved in it. And I'm involved in a project where, in terms of intellectual property, one of the projects I'm involved in, pharma put in $5 million of in-kind contributions, so the intellectual property side, where they waive the rights to help advance the innovation.
Yeah, but
but see, they're looking at it from a philanthropic standpoint.
In this case.
That's not the way I would look at it.
But there are other projects.
More excited.
Yes, I can talk to you later, but there are other projects.
Following on what you said already, I was curious about the issue of ownership and accountability. How do you solve the issue of ownership and accountability in that particular kind of example, in that particular fund?
One of the things that's really important when we're in Africa, if we want to advance capacity in terms of capacity of innovation, that area in itself requires that we work in an open source environment to build the capacity. One analogy I like to use when I'm talking to scientists and people working in biodiversity and traditional healers is that we each have a part of the recipe, as if we were baking a cake. And as long as we haven't produced a drug, the flour I have and the egg someone else has have no value. So we have to bring all our knowledge collectively together in an open source environment to actually bring the drugs that then it's about creating a system where everybody's bringing in their expertise and there's benefit sharing mechanisms that are in place that go back to biodiversity preservation, to indigenous knowledge, as well as to research and development and for profit generation. So it's about how do you structure the benefit sharing so everybody can bring in their intellectual property at the beginning. Because if we fight about intellectual property at the start, there will be no innovation.
You were talking about everyone having a piece of the solution, and I'm thinking of what John was saying in the context of microfinance in particular, but I think that it's not unique to microfinance that the G8 commitment, some of them are basically not implemented. The question that I'd like John and maybe also those who work at the domestic and community level, to what extent could we build more better link between what is decided in those big global platform and then how does it cascade down to actually help the poor in the community? And I think that that's, there are gaps there in the system that we need to understand better.
Very quickly, the GIT has come a long way over the past 10 years in developing civil society communities that connect with it. So the one that we think of first, especially if we have our university presidents who come from health, are the university G8. There's an academic G8, and they meet just before each G8 summit. And there is a movement to go to G8 plus 5. This year is the year to get it to G20. Pick a theme, and why not innovation and research in health, research networks throughout the world, which is a big American initiative, and they're still quite keen on moving it forward. So it may have legs. One of the big gaps is the only missing ingredient is a G8 business network or even a G8 plus 5 or G20 business network. If you look at the other class and kind of these plurilateral summit institutions, we grew up with the Commonwealth, right? And business has been there along with the parliamentarians, et cetera, et cetera. APEC, Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Leaders, they've got ABAC. APEC means business, and they meet with the leaders. It's a bit paradoxical that the G8, which is always thought of the club of the capitalists, doesn't have big business there. Yes, the International Chamber of Commerce, you know, writes a letter to them, but there's no equivalent to, say, the World Council on Sustainable Development or the big business community collectively, Mr. Sturcio's operation in the United States to connect with the G8. When you add to that that there is no G8 ministers of health meeting, that's sort of a missing part of the architecture. So final word. Now that we're at the foundational moment for the new institutionalized G20, the challenge of building its institutional structure is there. So do we imagine that it will be almost the complete captive of ministers of finance for the next 10 years?
I think we'll take time for a break now. Okay, 10 minutes.